ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Konnichiwa, Frank Kelly here, fresh from a holiday in Japan. And there's something special about escaping the everyday, isn't there? Diving headlong into a new culture, seeing the same sky but a different view, realizing what makes us all the same but different. And that's precisely what we offer on the Radio National Hour. Every weekday, you'll hear stories that surprise you. You'll meet people that make the news and make you think. So next time you feel like exploring the world, just search for the Radio National Hour right here on ABC Listen.
Inflation has surged to a whopping 4.6%, the highest level since 2023, as fuel shocks caused by the US-Iran war are biting across the country. It comes as the Prime Minister delivered his largest pre-budget speech in Western Australia, ruling out a gas super profits tax in the budget. Meanwhile, One Nation leader Pauline Hanson has taken to social media to celebrate her sexy new private plane. And guess who donated it? Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Karvelas.
And I'm David Spears.
And David, do you have a sexy plane of your own?
Look, I don't have my own sexy plane, nor am I a particular expert on small planes, but I don't know if you know this about me, PK, but one of my earliest jobs in this whole media game was for a commercial radio station as a traffic reporter slash journalist.
I did.
And I would spend a couple of hours each morning in a two-seater Cessna flying around the skies of Melbourne reporting on the traffic, which was great fun. That the plane I was in, look, it was far shakier and more dangerous looking than this. What is this? It's a Cirrus G7, this plane. Not a jet, but a... How would you describe it, PK? It's kind of small looking, but it's slick.
Small looking, but real fancy. Like the seats look really... I get why she called it sexy. And I just think the word sexy is so funny. So thanks, Pauline Hanson, for allowing me to say sexy this many times. We're going to come back to sexy
planes.
Slightly less sexy gas chat soon, unless you find gas profits sexy. I suppose if you're a gas boss, you think they're
Don't
very sexy.
Don't underestimate our listeners here, PK.
You're like, hey, look at my... sexy tax. But first, and I'm changing my tone dramatically because there's nothing sexy about this, my friends, that's the very significant inflation figures. So CPI has risen to 4.6% in the year to March. I don't think it's going to take an economist or a genius of any sort to know that's not in the 2 to 3% range that the RBA so desperately wanted to get in. I think we're a far cry from there. Okay, we've had a problem with inflation, but this is obviously a problem that has accelerated because of what we've seen in the Middle East. It is really significant still, I think, despite the Middle East crisis. It's the highest level since September 2023 when the government was in the doldrums dealing with the cost of living crisis. Seems to me they are back there, David, and this is nothing short of a headache.
Look, and we're into that classic scenario of government emphasising this is all to do with what's happening in the Middle East, the opposition arguing this is all to do with the government and its pre-existing problems. Look, there's a couple of very slightly positive elements here. It's not as bad as the expectations were, 4.6%. The markets, I think, were expecting 4.8. And look, this is, to be clear, before the fuel excise cut kicked in, so things might be a bit better since these figures. That's really clutching at some positives here because even the Treasurer acknowledged the Treasury is expecting the numbers to get worse. How much worse? We don't know. They're still finalising their forecast for the budget that's coming up in just under 2 weeks. But things are going to get worse than these sort of numbers. The headline 4.6, the underlying rate of 3.3%. And I think, look, you know, even when he points to other countries that might have worse inflation, it's cold comfort to mortgage holders who are now staring down the barrel of another rate rise next week.
Yes, to a sort of even think that any normal person would be like, but overseas, I understand it's,
followers.
I mean, it's not quite how it works. And fair enough, people live here and they expect things to go well here. Jim Chalmers obviously, though, does need and wants to spin this as much as he can. He talks about the decisive action implementing the fuel excise cut. Okay, they did do that. We're currently in that. He's also sort of telling us, hey, it was going to be worse. Again, as you say, a little bit of optimism, yes, and that's not irrelevant. And then we've got the political reaction. Now, of course, for voters, I don't think it's a blue team, red team thing. It's just a, oh, God, is my mortgage going up again for people who have mortgages?
100%, yep.
That's all they really care about. I don't think they care about, you know, who's the treasurer. Tim Wilson is the shadow treasurer. Now, he's really trying to make this all Jim Chalmers' problem, really, isn't he? This is that he's been building a narrative, and it's getting very personal between these two as well. What did he call him? A karaoke clown, Jim Chalmers called Tim Wilson. And is he a karaoke clown? Well, he's...
Well, I wouldn't be so unkind, but he did sing in the Parliament.
He sang in the Parliament, and now he's quoting songs to tell the inflation story. What do you think of that, David?
You're much cooler than I am, but he's put together, is it a Spotify playlist of some suggested budget-themed songs?
You're So Vain, followed by Janet Jackson's Nasty.
And he had another one.
Nasty.
He had another one at the press conference today, Tim Wilson. Take the pressure down.
Oh, God.
Local flavour to that one. Look, yeah, maybe this stuff works with some audiences. I don't know. But, yeah, you're right to say that the tension between the two is building. This is all building up to the budget, of course, where we will see how serious Jim Chalmers is about putting downward pressure on inflation. I think they're talking a big game. What's the vibe you're picking up, though, at the moment, PK? Are we going to see the sort of spending restraint that's going to make a difference to inflation in this budget? Because this has been the big point of criticism of the government, that it hasn't done enough on the spending front to rein in spending, to put downward pressure on inflation.
Well, we already know one area, and that's obviously NDIS, where they'll be making huge cuts and contentious cuts. So they've outlined that. That's meant to be the biggest area. But there are lots of other areas. I know that the ERC has been contemplating a lot of very significant cuts, actually, and they need to make them. And I still think they are preparing to do that. So, and they have to. But, you know, if you just sort of basic economics, does it deal ultimately with the inflation problem? Well, it'll contribute. Everything contributes. But, well, no, it's not going to turn around the inflation problem that's been baked in and is accelerated by what we're seeing in the Middle East. Like, it's a much bigger problem.
The big thing that will make a difference to inflation at this point is ships filled with oil starting to pass through the Strait of Hormuz. And we're yet to see a resolution there. And look, the government had been hoping and hoping that this would be resolved by the time it got to finalising the budget. But here we are. They've really got to sign off on this thing, you'd have to think, in the next week or 10 days, right? And it looks very unresolved.
Yeah, unresolved. Okay, so let's get into some of the kind of things we do know in terms of signing off. And some of the things we do know are based on what the Prime Minister has been telling us. So he spoke at the Chamber of Minerals and Energy event in WA today. We're recording this on a Wednesday. Pretty significant speech. You know, before the budget, there's a lot of orchestrated moments of the government framing their budget. I felt like we're hearing some of the lines that I thought that the Prime Minister was testing out when he did an interview with me a week ago. I've heard them over and over again. Now the budget of resilience, that's the centrepiece. He's really trying to frame it that way. He outlined what he said was the largest pre-budget speech. I love that. This is the biggest one you'll ever get. It's very Trumpy kind of language. The biggest ever budget speech. Very, very vague, I reckon, on the measures. However, I think he gave us the strongest possible indication yet that he's not a big fan of the gas tax. Now, I think we've known for a little while that it's buried dead, but he's wanting to put it on the record. I'm going to quote what he said and then throw to you, David, for your analysis, because there's a few words that perhaps leave some room, not for this budget, but I think future ones. That's my analysis. This is why I can confirm, even putting it in those words, I can confirm, that's his way of saying, this is an announcement, stupid people. This is why I can confirm that the budget will not undermine existing contracts on gas exports. The word I want you to analyse, David Spears, is existing.
Yes. Well, look, just to the context here, that interview he gave you last week, I thought was pretty clear for all who saw it that they ain't going to put, not going to make any changes to gas taxes in this budget. And then over the weekend, background conversations kind of firmed that up. But I think the audience here, giving this speech to the resources sector in WA was the giveaway, in case anyone needed it, that yeah, he's going over there for a reason to really make this clear. And then that line you mentioned there, confirming it publicly. But you're right to dwell on that word, existing contracts. It leaves a little bit of wiggle room. I don't think there's going to be any change at all in the coming budget. But where does it leave future contracts and renewals of contracts, which are, as I understand it, due around 2030, so in a 3 or 4 years from now? It leaves room for the government between now and then to come back to this and respond to this pressure that's there. And the pressure is coming, as we've touched on many times, from, you know, both sides of the political spectrum. But I think the pressure that Anthony Albanese and his cabinet ministers will be most attuned to will be the pressure from their own membership base, the Labor rank and file. They have a national conference in July, and I think this will be an issue there. We'll be post-budget by then. They won't have done anything on the gas tax, but there will be pressure from the rank and file to come back to this issue of getting a better return for Australians from these gas exports.
I so agree with you about why he's used the words existing contracts. And of course, that meant that people, you know, asked the question, whoa, like, because it's, but he has shut it down for this budget, right? So this budget, you're not going to see this. He's kind of, and he's also, you know, explaining why he thinks the settings are about right now. However, they are, I think they're actually quite smart to not close the door entirely, because a couple of reasons, public sentiment. Now, my best example of this is he gave us the strongest hint today in his speech that on intergenerational tax changes, you know, basically the housing taxes, capital gains, discount, negative gearing, he is prepared to go somewhere. A couple of years ago, he shut that one down too, right? So
yeah,
obviously when things change, so does the government. And so on gas tax exports, maybe things change in the next couple of years, and it gives an incentive in some ways for this campaign to continue to grow in its strength, then perhaps he can revisit it.
And just to touch on why now is not the time in the government's thinking and the Prime Minister's thinking, I think there are two, maybe three reasons here. One, and the Prime Minister said it, I think for the first time very publicly today, our gas exports, he said, are directly linked to our national fuel security. And the middle of a global fuel crisis is the worst possible time to jeopardise these relationships or the investment that underpins them. They were his words. So kind of confirming what we've all been talking about since he made the lap around the region to shore up the petrol and diesel supplies. He's saying this is all linked to the gas supply that we give them. You know, some will make the point that they are locked in contracts. You could still tax uncontracted gas and windfall profits. And anyway, without getting into that, that's the point the Prime Minister is making. These two things are linked. The other reason, I think, for the government here is a political one. Any increase in tax on gas can be easily weaponized by their opponents as contributing to your fuel price problems. I know gas is not what you're putting in. Most people are putting in their car. That's petrol and diesel. But the very notion would be easily turned by Angus Taylor and others into a line of attack against Labor for, you know, jacking up the cost of fuel more broadly. So I think they're the main reasons why now is not the time for the government to be going there. Nor does it think, just thirdly, that there is a windfall profit being made by the gas companies right now. That may change, but right now it doesn't think is the time to do this.
So as I see it, this is a reprieve, but not a permanent put your guns down for the gas lobby, right? It's a reprieve for them. It's like a little mini win, but they've got to keep fighting for their own social license, right?
Yeah.
And that's eroding on its own. No help from anyone else. And so I suppose, in my view, the pressure will be on them. And you can see already in funding a campaign against this, they're getting ready, but they can't just be defensive. They've got to actually earn their place, right, by delivering the gas here. And don't you reckon? Like, that's the way you change that.
And, you know, we know the Greens and David Pocock won't be dropping this. They won't be giving this up. You know, this will give them an opportunity to keep going after Labor. And they're often looking for an issue to go after Labor on. We talked about the NDIS changes last week, giving an opportunity to the Greens. This will too. If they don't touch gas in this budget, yeah, that's another issue on the left that they can, that the Greens can go after Labor on.
Yeah. Okay, we mentioned the sexy plane. It's only right we return to the sexiest plane of all. David, of course, we've been talking about Pauline Hanson's, and I quote, fast, amazing, sexy plane. She's been basically trolling sort of what she would consider left-wing media. She even says in her post, yes, it's going to annoy the Guardian. Yes, it means I can visit more regional towns across the country more often.
She even started the post with, yes, Sarah. I think she's referring to the Guardian's Sarah Martin, I assume.
former colleague of mine back when we were at the Oz.
Yeah, there you go, terrific journo.
Writing some great, terrific stories about Gina Rinehart and her money.
Bottom line with all of this, PK, it just strikes me how different are the political rules, the standards of politics for Pauline Hanson compared to, well, every other political leader. Can you imagine Anthony Albanese, Angus Taylor, Larissa Waters posting a slick social media video to brag about the fact they've received, a couple of $1 million in donations from wealthy donors and a spanking brand new plane, which apparently is worth about $1.5 million, producing a video to boast about this. Poor old Matt Canavan, the Nationals leader's sending quite the opposite visual message, isn't he? Camping out literally in his swag and beanie and Farah. And there's Pauline Hanson. Who does this remind you of? This sort of, we're getting a billionaire's donations here in a brand new plane as we appeal to the battlers. This is a very Trumpy message. And hoping that the voters of Albury, Deniliquin, others in Farah will respond to this. I don't know. Maybe they will. Maybe their frustration with the major parties is so great and they see this as a great alternative. But it's just so different to the sort of the political messaging that you would see from any other politician, don't you think?
It's really, absolutely. So, yes, it's of that MAGA kind of Trumpy style, 100%, couldn't agree more. And I suppose she's leaning into the accusations in some ways that she's this. Will it work in Australia? Well, the old caveat I will always use, which is we are a country of compulsory voting, where I think we've got the tall poppy syndrome here. We don't like glitz and glamour. This looks a bit fancy. I don't know. Like, I think it optically actually could hurt her. And I think fighting with journalists like that, sort of being gratuitous like that, I don't know if it ever really helps you other than makes you look like a bit of a smart ass.
Yeah, it probably does with some, but to a point. I think at the end of the day, what's driving the support for One Nation that we've seen over the last 6 months or so, it is this frustration with cost of living and the frustration that the system's not working, the major parties aren't delivering. Ultimately, there comes a point, though, with any populist movement where if they are given a position of power or seats in parliament, they're going to have to come up with solutions. We're seeing that with some of the difficulties Donald Trump is facing. And, should One Nation win in Farah, which the polls suggest they probably will, again, that scrutiny will come on their candidate, David Farley, far more once he's in parliament. It's not necessarily going to get easier to continue this sort of stuff once you do have a greater presence and face that greater scrutiny, I think. But it's just fascinating right now. I don't know who's going to win in Farah, but just the way Pauline Hanson can go about political messaging is just so different to everybody else. And not something I think we've really witnessed in Australia before.
We haven't witnessed it, and therefore it's high risk.
Exactly.
It's high risk. And also really interesting for people like me and you, just as an observers of what this will manifest into in terms of how voters view it. I really do think the Australian cringe kind of thing, we're not the US. I'll give you an example. I've got a good one. In the US, like, it's super cool to be really rich, right? Trump's wealth, you can't weaponize it against him. It is seen as nothing short, even by sort of more left-leaning people, that part of it as well. Look at him, he's successful. Here, any time we've had a leader that's had money, it has hurt them.
Absolutely.
Malcolm Turnbull, Mr. Harbourside Mansion, was dubbed by Peter Credlin for crying out loud, this kind of, Point Piper, top hat kind of dude. Kevin Rudd and the wealth of his wife particularly. She made a lot of money, of course, through her businesses.
Even Angus Taylor cops it from Labor for the silver spoon, that sort of thing that he's grown up with
we
wealth.
We don't like it here.
No, it's seen as a political negative. And perhaps that has gone way too far in Australia over the years. But your point is right. Compared to the US, where it's not a problem at all.
No, as I say, it's like seen as nothing short of kind of cool, really. So, Yeah, so I think it could, but I suppose her defence will always be, yeah, I'm getting the help of people like Gina Rinehart because she's, you know, a true patriot. That's how they sort of frame it. But she's not a ritzy woman herself, Pauline Hanson. So that would be their defence. Interesting, though, you can hear the weaponisation of it already from the political leaders. The Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, didn't miss. He said Hanson is a wholly owned subsidiary of Gina Rinehart. Mm. I don't think Gina Rinehart is particularly popular. And so tying her to Pauline Hanson and then tying Pauline Hanson to Trump in a country that doesn't think he's awesome for having lots of money, that's us, I think that is problematic for her, I do.
Did you see Barnaby Joyce's defence of this? He spoke to our colleague Jacob Grieber and suggested that this is all fine because if Gina Rinehart's donated a plane, they can, you know, fly privately everywhere. It means they don't have to sit on Qantas or Virgin flights and be bugged by someone sitting next to them for favours.
There you go.
Okay. So, like, is he sort of suggesting he'll avoid lobbyists or foreign interference?
That sort of lobbying from someone sitting next to you on the plane was cited as the issue here.
Mm. Maybe I should call Barnaby and tell him about how one of my tricks on planes, so I travel quite a bit, I put my headphones in my ears and say, I'm just listening to something.
He did note that even if you jam your headphones on as tight as you can, people sitting next to you don't get the message.
Really?
So people listening, if you wind up sitting next to Barnaby Joyce on a plane, just
respect
bear in mind.
Respect his headphones.
Yeah, if the headphones are on, please leave him alone.
All right. Not sure if that passes my pub test, but you make your own mind up. David, it's always good to have you on the pod. Thank you.
Thanks, PK. Cheers.
Tomorrow, Fran and I will be joined by Shane Reich, Senior Economics Correspondent for The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald, to look at a very economics-y week. Every week's a big economics-y week. Then you'll be back on the feed for Insiders on Background. Who've you got?
We can't say just yet. Sorry,
oh,
we
might. So
look, we do have someone, but we're just trying to work out absolute confirmation. So watch this space.
Oh gosh, look at him, forward sizzle. Yes. Okay. Well, I am interested to find out. So as soon as we know, we'll tell you. If you've got a question, send it to thepartyroom@abc.net.au. See you, David.
See you, PK.